I'm Paul Cherry, and this is The Dark North, Gangs of Montreal. While the Rizzuto crime organization and the Hells Angels always seem to get attention in Montreal, there's another gang that has been around the city longer than both of them. And it has played a key role in organized crime here, especially in drug trafficking. It is called the West End Gang, a group of criminals, mostly of Irish descent, that made their name robbing banks and hijacking trucks in the 1970s. But their control of Montreal's international port made the West End Gang an indispensable part of drug trafficking here. They worked with the Montreal Mafia, the Hells Angels, and other organized crime groups. Even though they didn't have a formal organization that was as structured as the Mafia or the Hells, they ran a criminal enterprise that smuggled billions of dollars of hashish and cocaine into Montreal. We hope you're enjoying The Dark North. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It was a gang of mostly Irish guys from the Point and from Griffintown who mostly robbed banks, boosted trucks, and then got into drugs.
A lot of people said that he was like Santa Claus because he would give away so much food to the church and to the community. He personified the old style gangster.
If you are the king, you got power. You have a lot of money, you got power. And with that money and power, you can do particularly what you want to do anything to anyone and to keep that power.
In the 1970s, the West End Gang was hijacking trucks, robbing banks and jewelry stores, and breaking into warehouses to steal and resell whatever was inside. D'Arcy O'Connor wrote a book about the West End Gang called Montreal's Irish Mafia. He said many people in the gang came from the waterfront communities in Montreal where Irish immigrants had settled.
Yeah, they call themselves, you know, Westies, and they, of course, were often connected by marriage. And they often grew up together in the streets of Pointe St. Charles or Verdun. So West End Gang was sort of a term that they adopted, but they accepted. And as I say, it was used by the cops and certainly by the press.
It was a group composed of all kinds of specialists, electricians, locksmiths, truck drivers, and safecrackers. They worked with scouts and tipsters all over the city to find out when a warehouse or a truck might contain something worth stealing. They stole $100,000 worth of jeans, thousands of bottles of rum. They robbed jewelry stores. Nothing was too small for them. Even in the late 1990s, they were stealing and selling frozen chicken. But some members of the West End Gang had bigger plans, much bigger. In the 1970s, Montreal had the dubious title of being the bank robbery capital of the world. It was not unusual to see the Montreal police handle up to 800 bank holdups each year. And the West End Gang was involved in one of the biggest, a daring heist in 1976 that made international headlines. They stole $2.7 million from a Brinks truck that was picking up cash at a Royal Bank in Old Montreal. The truck driver was a man named Gilles Lachapelle. André Savard is a retired Montreal police officer who worked on the force's armed robbery squad.
And he knew for a fact that they were picking up between 1 million and 3 million. And at the time, you're going back 1976, that was a lot of money. I believe that he was an honest man, but it's like somebody wants to get better, you know, he wants to, he's carrying money every week and can't help but thinking, you know, how easy it might be, you know, to organize something to steal.
So Lachapelle starts talking, and one thing leads to another, and he ends up talking to a member of the East End Gang, a group of criminals that worked in the East End of the city of Montreal. The East End Gang and the West End Gang got together and started planning. The leader of the East End Gang, Roger Provençal, was the brains behind the plan. The security guards in the armored truck had a routine when they would pick up money at the Royal Bank.
They pick up the money, bring it back in the truck, and then they go back inside the building again to the cafeteria, all three of them, and have a coffee.
The decision was made to steal the money while the guards were in the bank's cafeteria. On March 30th, 1976, the Brinks truck arrives at the Royal Bank on St. James Street, and the three guards get out. They go into the bank, pick up bags of cash, put it in the truck, and head off to eat. La Chapelle stays inside the truck.
While they're back in the bank, a panel truck pulls up in front of the Brinks truck. The back doors open, and the driver is now staring into the muzzle of a either a 50 caliber machine gun or some say an anti-aircraft gun, and which obviously could penetrate the window of a Brinks truck. And he was somebody got out of the van, side door of the van, came around and told him to open the door. He certainly wasn't going to do anything about it. Open the door, and then person who got in beside him in the passenger said, just follow the van. And they followed the van and went off to Nuns Island.
O'Connor says it was the West End gang that supplied the gun.
So they brought in the West End gang because both for muscle and for weapons. This was at a time when supposedly the West End gang was getting weapons from the IRA. And whether that's true or not, I don't know. I never established that.
When they came out of the bank, the guards were stunned to find that their truck was gone. Our truck has disappeared. It's not a joke. We no longer have a truck, one of the guards recalled telling his shocked co-workers. La Chapelle was forced to drive the truck to Nuns Island in southwest Montreal. Members of the two gangs were waiting. They took the money from the truck and put it in their cars.
They punched the driver, broke his glasses, and so on. He had asked them to do that, that he wasn't a part of it, and handcuffed him to the steering wheel and then took off. When the cops found him, the driver was there, handcuffed to the steering wheel. The Brinks truck was empty. It was a large amount, the biggest amount that had ever been robbed from the Brinks company in North America, and certainly the biggest robbery in Montreal. And this was at a time when Montreal was known as the bank robbery capital of North America. And so this broke all the records.
Police said it was the largest armed robbery in Montreal history. Even in a city known for bank robberies, the Brinks job was over the top.
It certainly was a lot of pressure being put on by the police to solve this from the mayor on down. And all the publicity it was getting, and the publicity was all over North America because of the size of the robbery.
The police department set up a special squad to solve the robbery.
You know, there was a lot of pressure in the police department. This was the biggest robbery, the robbery of the century, where they had to do something about it.
Andre Savard was put in charge of the new team. He pulled in several young officers who were working downtown Montreal, and they turned up the heat on the West End gang.
Since I suspected the West Gang, we started hitting their clubs, you know. I remember a club in the old Montreal we hit under the floor with shotgun. And then near in the bathroom behind toilet seats and stuff, they had some drugs hidden in the toilet.
Savard's team was called the Rubber Duck Squad, after a country song that was very popular at the time. They raided club after club, especially in the Notre-Dame de Grasse neighborhood where West End gang leader Dooney Ryan and his men hung out. Police eventually realized that the robbery was an inside job. The dominoes began to fall. The truck driver, Gilles Lachapelle, another Brinks employee, and one man from the East End gang were sent to jail. Lachapelle opened up and talked to the police. He admitted he had planned the heist for years while he worked for Brinks. He was waiting for the right opportunity to make a big score. By then, the West End gang had moved on to even more lucrative crimes, drug smuggling. The leader of the West End gang in the 1980s was a man named Frank Ryan, better known by his nicknames Dooney and then the King of Coke. He was born in Montreal and quickly began a life of crime. He robbed jewelry stores here, and then hooked up with other Irish criminals in Boston for bank robberies. He was arrested and spent 6 years in a U.S. jail. By the middle of the 1970s, though, he was back in Montreal, leading the West End gang.
I met with a lot of his henchmen from that time. Several of them said, when you'd come out of jail, You'd go straight to whatever bar in the West End Dooney was hanging out at then and doing his business from. He would set you up with money, maybe a bit of cocaine and so on. And so you kind of owed him in a way. And then he'd get you involved, of course, in the drug business or in robbing a bank or something like that. But they all trusted him. He was generous to a fault, they said. At Christmas time, he was known to give out fur coats to his guides. And of course, these fur coats probably had fallen off the back of a truck somewhere.
Ryan was called to testify at Quebec's organized crime inquiry. He boasted that he was living off $100,000 he had stolen from a bank. But he denied allegations that he was the West End gang's money launderer.
Then they got into drugs. Then they realized that there was a lot of money in importing and selling drugs. And so that's when Dooney realized that that's the business to get in. And so that's when they started making really some really big money.
The West End gang controlled the key path for drugs to get into Montreal, the port of Montreal. Many Montrealers of Irish descent had jobs unloading ships at the port because it was close to the same working-class neighborhoods that had produced the leaders of the West End gang. The gangsters used intimidation and their neighborhood connections to control the port.
And so they were able to bring in large quantities of drugs. And then that's when they started cooperating with the Italians started cooperating with them, because the Italians now had a conduit through the Port of Montreal to bring in their drugs. Often it was heroin, and then cocaine started coming in and so on. And even the biker gangs got into it. Now the biker gangs needed Dooney Ryan and his people who control the port to bring in hashish and coke and stuff like that.
Dooney Ryan quickly became one of Montreal's biggest drug dealers. He was making a lot of money, and some people did not like that.
You did not cross Dooney, that's for sure. And if you chiseled him, you know, maybe on a dope deal or something like that, he would take care of it. He would have people take care of it. But if you played fair with him, he was a good man to have or to work with. But as I say, there was jealousy brewing.
That jealousy came to a head in 1984. It was a cold November night. Snow was falling. Dooney Ryan was at Nidalo's Garden Motel, a West End gang hangout in Montreal's NDG neighborhood. Witnesses said Ryan was talking with Paul Aprile, a drug dealer who had been working with the West End gang. Aprile owed Ryan money, some people say as much as $200,000. Ryan and Aprile went outside together. Police believe Aprile lured Ryan to one of the motel rooms. Ryan was ambushed. He was shot in the chest and head and died on the motel room floor. John Westlake is a retired Montreal police officer. He worked on the Forces drug squad while the West End gang was expanding its drug smuggling.
If you are the king, you got power. You have a lot of money, you got power. And with that money and power, you can do particularly what you want to do anything to anyone and to keep that power. But as you see with Dooney Ryan, the millions and millions that he made was never recovered.
With Dooney Ryan dead, his friend and business partner, Alan Ross, took over the West End gang.
Alan the Weasel Ross. Well, you know, he was a Montrealer and he was involved with Dooney Ryan and everybody else that he could be involved with. He was dangerous. He was feared.
Ross and other members of the gang avenged Dooney Ryan's murder. At Ryan's funeral, they met up with Yves Apache Trudeau. He's the Laval, Hell's Angel, and hitman we talked about in last week's episode. Ross told Trudeau he'd cancel the biker gang's drug debts if he took care of Aprile. Trudeau built a bomb and hid it in a VCR. Then he delivered it to Aprile's apartment, across the street from a downtown Montreal police station. Trudeau detonated the bomb, killing Aprile and three other people. The blast was so violent, it severed the building's elevator cables, sending the two elevators plummeting to the basement. Ross's nickname was the Weasel, because of his ability to get out of arrests. Once he took over as the West End gang's leader, he became one of Montreal's biggest cocaine importers. He traveled to the Caribbean and South America. He bought cocaine, marijuana, and hashish. He arranged to have drugs shipped to the U.S., to Italy, and to Canada. The drugs, in 15-kilogram loads, were often driven across the border into Canada, hidden inside vehicles. Then he became more brazen, hiding hundreds of kilos in containers on ships.
And he became a major, cocaine importer, making a lot of money for himself and for other people within the gang. Much more money than they were making under Denis Ryan.
But in 1991, the weasel's luck ran out. He was arrested in Florida, ratted out by someone who saw him leaving his condo in Fort Lauderdale. He lied to the arresting officer about who he was. Then he offered him a $200,000 bribe to release him. Ross was convicted of importing 300 tons of marijuana and 10,000 kilograms of cocaine. He was sentenced to life in prison and ordered to pay a $10 million fine. He died in jail in the summer of 2018. He was 74 years old. Unlike most gangsters, he died of natural causes. Ross was the leader of the West End gang, but he wasn't the only one smuggling drugs. Jerry and Richard Maddox were brothers and members of the gang. They controlled the port of Montreal. Their illegal activities at the port led to a scandal that rocked Quebec's provincial police department, the Sûreté du Québec. It became known as the Maddox Affair. They were arrested for smuggling hash and shipping containers, but their case was thrown out of court when a judge ruled the Sûreté du Québec had planted evidence. Quebec ordered a public inquiry into the police actions. It found the provincial police department was unprofessional, fought turf wars with other police forces, and routinely broke the law. In an interview with the Montreal Gazette after that, Jerry Maddox claimed that police had treated him unfairly all his life. Maddox told the Gazette, "I inherited who I am from my family. We're not saints." It wasn't the last time the Maddox brothers tangled with the police, though. Years later, while police were investigating the Hells Angels, they found that several of the gang members were visiting a butcher shop that Maddox owned. The building, in South Shore Saint-Hubert, had a large green shamrock on the outside. Maddox ended up being charged with smuggling hash and cocaine in 2001. He was arrested with most of the people in the Hells Angels' most powerful chapter in Montreal. Police said that more than $2 billion worth of hash and coke was smuggled through the port under the West End gang. George Kalogirakis is the Montreal Gazette's deputy editor. While he was the newspaper's court reporter, he researched Maddox's empire.
Well, he had amazing connections, and the way he would do things would be the container's obviously full of drugs. You want to have as little documentation on them as possible. So in another port, somewhere else in Europe or Asia, an extra container would be put on a ship. No documentation, no paperwork, nothing. It would be put on somebody corrupt at that end. And when it arrives in Montreal, it doesn't really exist. So one of his people, and he had many because he was part of the union, would just take the container and make it disappear. And all the drugs would arrive in Montreal.
Maddox's business partner, a vitamin salesman named Elias Louis Lekas, became a police informant. Lekas told police Maddox would get containers through the port while demanding a percentage of whatever got through as payment, usually 25% of the load, but it could go as high as 33%. Faced with a mountain of evidence piling up against him, Maddox pleaded guilty to drug smuggling. But before he went to jail, a judge heard tales of his generosity in the community.
We're talking about people like who are priests, people in charge of like the local football team, which is a very popular team. We're talking about people in the community who also look after various charities. And all of them said that Jerry was not a danger to the population because they knew another side of him. They knew him as Santa Claus, who would give away food to the church, who would help the church fix its roof, who would do a lot of things. He had this Robin Hood kind of personality in the area. He personified the old style gangster.
There have been signs recently that the West End gang has been taken over by a younger generation. Jamie and Cody Laramie, two brothers who police say had taken over for the Maddox brothers, were gunned down in LaSalle in 2013. That same year, Brian Forget, another alleged member of the West End gang, pleaded guilty to smuggling three large shipments of hashish into Canada, along with Alain Charron, one of the most prolific drug smugglers in Canada.
Whether there's West End gang types, you know, the new generation around, I don't know. Some people say there are, and there's a bar, I believe, in the Villasalle, where they hang out now. Maybe there is another generation of West End gang types coming up. Could be.
The West End gang played a key role in Montreal's underworld. But there were other gangs carving out a place for themselves. Street gangs. They started out small in the 1980s. Now, they are among the most powerful criminal organizations in Montreal. Next time on Gangs of Montreal.
We were just kids that were going to school and playing sport and hanging together, you know, because we were going to school together. But we always felt like we, since young age, before we went into gangs, that police and already target us as gangsters, you know.
It's not organized crime, it's disorganized crime. They don't even know what they're doing. They go on buses and you're wearing a blue toque and they shoot you, you know, and they can't even shoot straight. That's why they're not killing them. They're hurting them, but they're not killing anybody.
The Dark North, Gangs of Montreal, is written and produced by Monique Baudin and me, Paul Cherry. Additional production and editing by Carson Jarama. Theme music is by Bryce Hall. Emma McKay is the Montreal Gazette's digital executive producer, and Lucinda Choden is our editor-in-chief. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.